Lane wrote the short with me in mind, so he called me about it and gave me the script, and I read it, and we literally shot it in 3 days.
To me, what the film's about is two kids who are put in a very adult situation and end up responding in a more adult way than the adult that put them in that situation in the first place.
They don't understand. That's all right.
Must have been crazy. I must have been mad.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Germany makes amends to Hitler's gay victims, Boys Life 3 continues an outgoing cinematic series, and new queer music is Crazy by Cohen and Welcome by Corday, while McCumson has The Answer. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Chase Schulte.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending December 9th, 2000. Germany this week issued a long-awaited apology to gay victims of the Nazi Holocaust. The lower house of the German parliament, the Bundestag, unanimously approved a government resolution saying, "The parliament is convinced that the honor of the homosexual victims of Nazism must be rebuilt and apologizes for the harm done to homosexual citizens up to 1969 in their human dignity, their opening out, and their quality of life." 1969 was the year Germany finally repealed the infamous Paragraph 175, an anti-gay law the Nazis extended to the point that even a look between two men could lead to arrest. It's generally accepted that some 10,000 gays were sent to concentration camps, although some believe the number may be much higher, and they were usually the worst treated of any prisoners there. Unlike other Holocaust victims, gays were still considered criminals after liberation, so most tried to hide the reason for their incarceration. Other Holocaust victims received official apology years earlier. This week's resolution also called for a government report on appropriate compensation for gay Holocaust victims.
Another horrific historical revelation came out of Norway this week, where a review of health archives revealed that 370 men and 44 women were victims of forced castration between 1934 and 1969. Many of the male victims were homosexuals who had been incarcerated either in mental institutions or facilities for young offenders. Many were less than 20 years old. The practice was first instituted with the idea of preventing repeat offenses by rapists, but was soon extended to other groups, including even epileptics.
Lesbians and gays seeking asylum in Britain should have a better chance at a full hearing after the introduction this week of new so-called gender guidelines for immigration judges. Although primarily directed at raising judges' awareness of forms of persecution directed specifically at women, the new guidelines discuss lesbians and gays as well. Judges are instructed that sexual orientation can be a basis for persecution and are asked to give special consideration to gay and lesbian couples in stable relationships. The guidelines note that forced heterosexual marriage violates gays and lesbians' right to a private sexual life. They also say that those who fail or refuse to conform to behavioral norms, including standards of dress, may be punished and persecuted. The guidelines also seek to sensitize judges to the special difficulties asylum applicants may have in giving testimony regarding sexual abuse. The U.S. also issued guidelines this week discussing special issues of women refugees.
An Iowa court this week struck down a gubernatorial order prohibiting discrimination in state employment based on sexual orientation and gender identity. The September 1999 executive order by Democratic Governor Tom Vilsack was the first in the nation to protect transgendered people. Iowa's Republican legislators objected to it immediately. First, they tried to repeal it through legislation, but of course Vilsack vetoed the repeal bill. Then in July, 23 Republican state lawmakers filed a lawsuit claiming that Vilsack had exceeded his authority in adding four categories to his executive order that are not protected elsewhere in Iowa law, the other two being gender and marital status. Polk County District Judge Glenn Pill agreed and struck down the order as a violation of the separation of powers in the Constitution of Iowa. Vilsack had maintained that he was only seeking to implement an Iowa law calling for equal opportunity in state employment to all persons. Republicans have insisted throughout the controversy that their concerns were strictly constitutional, but Democrats charge they acted out of homophobia and a desire to stir up religious conservatives for last month's elections.
Civil rights for gays and lesbians are also under attack in Dade County, Florida, where religious right groups have turned in what should be enough signatures to put a repeal measure before voters in 2002. The same groups had failed to qualify a repeal measure earlier this year. Dade County has historical significance because it passed one of the earliest civil rights measures in the U.S. to protect gays and lesbians in the 1970s, only to have voters repeal the ordinance in the nation's first high-profile religious right anti-gay political campaign, the Save Our Children campaign, led by singer Anita Bryant. The county didn't reenact an ordinance against discrimination based on sexual orientation until 2 years ago.
The Atlanta, Georgia City Council this week approved broader and stronger civil rights ordinances, including protection for gays and lesbians. Previously, the city had prohibited discrimination only in city employment, city contracts, and certain public accommodations, and enforcement provisions were weak. A package of bills by openly lesbian city council member Kathy Woolard now prohibits discrimination in private employment, housing, and all public accommodations, with two mechanisms for enforcement. One is a restructured city human rights commission, which can hear complaints, investigate them, mediate between the parties, issue orders of enforcement, and punish offenders by terminating their city contracts and licenses. The other allows those who believe they have experienced discrimination to file civil lawsuits in Atlanta Municipal Court.
Activists in Hawaii made public this week a recent court ruling granting second-parent adoptions to lesbian co-parents for the first time. Three lesbians were allowed to adopt children their partners had born without the biological mothers losing their own parental status. The legal ruling had been intentionally kept under wraps to avoid influencing last month's elections, in which state Board of Education races were already heated by controversy over a policy to protect gay and lesbian students. The public announcement came as part of the launch of a new Civil Rights, Civil Unions campaign for the upcoming state legislative session.
Finland's government announced last week its acceptance of a proposal from its justice ministry for legal recognition of gay and lesbian couples. The bill will be introduced in the parliament within the next few weeks and come to a vote in the new year. Three political parties are almost unanimous in their support, two are divided, and a conservative party opposes it. Activists are fairly confident of its passage, despite the failure of a similar bill in 1996. While the proposed partnerships include some benefits of marriage, they will not be called marriages and will not include adoption rights.
Belgium's government is ready to move ahead on adding some real benefits to the essentially ceremonial statutory cohabitation contracts that went into effect this year. Those were so pointless that hardly any couples have used them. But earlier this year, the government set up an all-party working group to review the laws for discrimination against gay and lesbian couples, and now it's preparing to implement some of that group's recommendations. The government's draft family policy paper for 2001 was presented to the parliament last week, and it included lifting the ban on adoptions by gay and lesbian couples. However, they will only be able to adopt Belgian children because of international conventions.
Toronto's gay-affirming Metropolitan Community Church, MCC, believes it may be able to achieve the world's first gay and lesbian marriages through a method that's several centuries old. The practice is called publishing the banns of marriage, which simply means announcing at three consecutive church services or in three weekly church bulletins that a couple intends to marry. The familiar Anglican formula for those announcements asks, if any know any cause or just impediment why these two should not be joined in holy matrimony, you are to declare it. Under common law, which the Toronto MCC says is still recognized in Ontario's provincial law, once the banns are published, the church can issue a marriage license to the couple. The church's pastor, Brent Hawks, intends to begin the practice in the new year, and church legal counsel are prepared to defend it if objections are raised as anticipated. Certainly the idea has already sparked controversy. The Office of Ontario's Registrar General has said it will not accept the church's licenses, and the provincial government is reviewing the legalities. The Conservative province of Alberta has already announced it will not recognize MCC's marriages. A national effort is already underway to sue for full marriage rights for Canada's gay and lesbian couples.
And finally, Rolling Stone this week published a lengthy interview with outgoing U.S. President Bill Clinton. He reaffirmed his view that equal treatment of gays and lesbians is a civil rights issue and denounced the Boy Scouts of America's policy of excluding gays. He also reminisced at length about the Republican political maneuvers that forced the military policy on gays and lesbians to the top of the agenda at the beginning of his first term in 1993. Senator Bob Dole's strategy denied him the chance to eliminate the ban on military service by gays and lesbians as he'd envisioned, and he took the only action he could to prevent the legislators from codifying the complete ban into law. He developed the so-called Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy in consultation with then-head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff General Colin Powell and won the agreement of the War College. Clinton said he has never been satisfied with this policy or its implementation. However, his dissatisfaction was not expressed with the use of a quite unpresidential phrase that appeared in Rolling Stone and was quoted in the New York Times. Rolling Stone had to apologize for a transcription error that had Clinton referring to the policy not as don't ask, but as dumbass.
That's News Wrap for the week ending December 9th, 2000, written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Chase Schulte.
Later in the program, new queer words and music from the audio file featuring Steve Cohen, Corday, and Deanne McCumson. But first, Boys Life is the name of the Boy Scouts of America's official magazine. It's also a successful series of award-winning gay short films put together by Strand Releasing. Do not confuse the two. Boys Life 3 is the third entry in the series of anthology films that began in 1995, followed in 1997 by Boys Life 2. So, is the third time a charm? This Way Out's Steve Pride tells all.
Boys Life 3 continues the tradition of award-winning gay films that deal with coming out and the trials and tribulations of being gay. This year's program consists of five segments. The first is Majorettes in Space, about a Soviet cosmonaut who loves majorettes, a neurotic heterosexual couple, a guy who loves airports, and old Vincent who digs boys. And it's all in French. Next up is Hitch, directed by Bradley Rusty Gray, a documentary-styled road movie that provides an intimate study of the sexual dynamics between two young men traveling together. Insulated in the center of the compilation is Inside Out, written and directed by Jason Gould. It's the weakest part of the program, but that's like being the ugliest Miss America. You're still pretty. Lane Janger is best known as the producer of the feature films I Like It Like That and the gay romantic comedy I Think I Do. His directorial contribution to Boys Life 3 is a short film called Just One Time, starring himself, Jolie Carter, and the amazing Guillermo Diaz.
Yo, Michelle, wait up! You know, I could have bought this myself, but, I mean, what if my parents were coming out of the shop or something?
Why don't you just tell them?
What, are you crazy? My mom would, like, totally freak.
So you wear pink shoes. You think she's stupid?
Yo, these aren't pink, okay? They're fuchsia.
They're fuchsia. Okay, like any straight man is gonna wear fuchsia sneakers, Victor.
Shh. Yo, wait up. Yo, check it out. Anthony and Amy are fighting again.
Hey, come on, baby. I said I was sorry, okay?
We're sorry you wouldn't have asked me in the first place.
Can I help it if it's my fantasy?
Anthony, I don't want to have sex with a woman just so you can...
I'm not asking you to have sex. I just want to see the two of you be intimate.
It makes me uncomfortable.
Just one time.
Oh!
My name is Lane Janger. The film is Just One Time. It's about a guy who asks his fiancée to have a three-way with another woman.
I'm Guillermo Diaz, and I play Victor in Just One Time. And I play Amy's best friend in the film, who's played by Joel Carter. And I have a big crush on Lane Janger's character, who's Anthony. Lane wrote the short with me in mind, so he called me about it and gave me the script, and I read it, and we literally shot it in 3 days.
I asked Lane Janger if his film had a message.
I don't think it's so much a message film, but I do want people to, like, you know, I like it when people leave the theater and they're talking about, oh, that maybe we should try a three-way, or maybe it's not such a terrible thing. And, you know, I guess I would like people to come out a little bit more open-minded, you know, and feeling freer to explore relationships. Straight people feel freer to explore relationships with gay people and vice versa.
Boys Life 3 ends with one of the strongest films in the compilation, 30 Bucks, starring Sarah Gilbert, a coming-of-age film told through the eyes of a 16-year-old boy. 30 Bucks was directed by Gregory Cook and written by Christopher Landon.
Gotti, you haven't heard a word I've said.
No, I have.
2 seconds ago, you looked like NASA sent your brain to Mars.
Sorry.
Okay. Ready? Quit looking so nervous. It's not that big a deal. You'll see. Well, go on. You got the 30 bucks I gave you? Good man. I'll be back in about an hour. Go.
Hi, I'm Gregory Cook.
Hi, I'm Christopher Landon.
Without giving too much away, tell me the story of 30 bucks.
It's a story about a 16-year-old boy who's taken to a prostitute on his birthday by his father as a rite of passage, if you will. And what ends up happening, without giving too much away, is that there's a bond and a friendship that occurs between the boy, Scott, and the prostitute who he visits, Emily, played by Sarah Gilbert. Really, I think, to me, what the film's about is two kids who are put in a very adult situation and end up responding in a more adult way than the adult that put them in that situation in the first place.
Why do a short?
Why do a short? That's a good question. Why the hell did I do it? No, I think that actually short films are definitely their own little art form. They're very difficult. At least as a writer, I find short films are more difficult to write than features because you have such a limited amount of time. You know, you're dealing with a very compact format, so you have to try and get as much in as you can and try and have some kind of a plot, but not too much. I mean, I think the problem with and the challenge with a short film and what I've seen in the past, people tend to try and do too much story, too much going on, and then it's ironic they sort of lose the plot in the process, or they really don't have anything to say at all. You know, it's style over substance.
As a writer, tell me how you got the idea for the film and the genesis of it and all that good stuff.
Sometimes it's hard to really explain where some of these ideas really come from. They just sort of pop into your head, and I just started to think about this sort of little scenario that just kept growing in my head, and then I just committed it to paper, finally. I'm sort of known for writing material that is very dark, usually violent, and so this is sort of an experiment for me to write something that was a little bit more emotional, a little bit sweeter, I guess. And I really was interested in writing something about the comfort of strangers and how when you put two complete strangers in a room, how they might actually disclose a lot more than they would to, you know, their families or the people that are around them.
So, you have a name? All right, you don't have to tell me if you don't want to.
Scott.
Hi, Scott.
Hi.
Is this your first time? Well, don't worry, it's easy. Don't be nervous.
You knew Sarah Gilbert as a child. Did you ever offer her $30?
No, I didn't. She was my first kiss, though, when I was a little boy. And we grew up together. I mean, we were like family. We still are.
If Christopher Landon's last name rings a bell, it's because he's the son of Michael Landon, the all-American star of three television series, Bonanza, Little House on the Prairie, and Highway to Heaven, shows that embraced family values and gave the elder Landon over 3 decades of public adoration. Although a bit off topic, with that in mind, I asked 25-year-old Christopher Landon about his own coming of age.
I was a strange kid. I used to worry that the world was going to run out of water and food and oxygen and things like that. And I think I was always in some kind of state of worry. I was very introverted, very shy. I came out to my family when I was 22, and it all happened very quickly for me because I didn't have relationships with men really prior to that time. I just had girlfriends, but I didn't want to live a double life, and I felt just comfortable enough, I think, to actually tell them.
Do you think your dad knew you were gay at some level?
Yeah. He had actually talked about it with my stepmother. Never actually brought it up with me, but I was so young. I mean, I was 16 when he passed away, so I think he was just going to let me just go my own way, whatever way that was. But my stepmother told me, we talked about it once, and she said, you know, that he had talked about it with her and said that he thought I might be gay, but that it was cool. And I wasn't really, I mean, I've never really been worried about that. I think he would have been fine. My dad was a very, I mean, he had his morals and whatnot, but he was also very liberal and just very accepting of most everybody. So it was never a concern.
Boys Life 3 is a Strand release, coming soon to a theater near you. This has been Steve Pride with Lane Janger, Guillermo Diaz, Gregory Cook, and Christopher Landon. Thanks for listening.
You're just too good to be true.
I'm Stephen Fry. The great Oscar Wilde once said, "The only sin is stupidity." That is why it is imperative that we stay as informed as possible. An excellent way to do this is to listen to This Way Out, the international radio program for all our sexually diverse communities.
One well-known out musician lives up to expectations, another confounds them, and a new artist bursts on the scene to set her own standards in this latest installment from The Audiophile.
Never would have planned it, didn't see it coming, but damn it, it feels nice. Never would have planned. It's all right. It feels right.
I don't really self-identify as far as sexual orientation. Other people identify me as gay, I suppose. But I'm open-minded, I guess, is the way I would describe myself. I kind of follow my heart, and it's not always a choice about gender for me. It's important for me to be myself, so if that includes being out, then yeah, it's really important to me just to be who I am and not to hide.
Deanne Makemson's honesty rings as true as the crystal clarity of her voice on her debut CD, The Answer. Hi, I'm Chris Wilson.
I'm Pam Marshall, and you're listening to Audiophile. Makemson, a New York City singer-songwriter, showcases her heartfelt lyrics with stunning vocals.
You won't look at me, but I see through you. I get to you, and you get to me. But I will never be the answer.
For more information about Deanne Makemson, email dmakemson. That's DMACOMSON at AOL.com.
Philadelphia-based musician Steve Cohen is back with his latest CD, I Must Have Been Crazy.
You said you loved me. I was blind. 'Cause I could never get in touch with the way I felt inside. I always needed more time alone. 'Cause I could never be myself when you were at home. Must have been crazy. I must have been mad.
Steve Cohen tackles everything from love to gay bashing in this collection of Out originals.
Some people call it a homicide. Some people call it a fight. I just call it what it is. There's a young boy lying in the street tonight. I can tell you what it was like. Nobody saw me, but I was there. They start to hit him now, won't take away their pain. Won't talk again, but I can hear him scream. Touch him now, he can't feel a thing. 'Cause what your kind of love's supposed to bring. Hit him now, won't take away their pain. Won't talk again, but I can hear him scream. Touch him now, he can't feel a thing. 'Cause what your kind of love's supposed to bring.
For more about this singer-songwriter who tells it like it is, check out www.stevecohenmusic.com.
The latest release from Southern California musician Corday is called Welcome to My Past.
I'm beside myself, you're inside you. My rainbow is turning to black and blue. And even your cheap cigars and your red wine can't hide the darkness beneath the sunshine. And you're poisoning me with your sweet cologne. You're everywhere.
Welcome to My Past is somewhat of a departure from Corday's heretofore strictly rock persona and gives the listener a glimpse at a more introspective side of this talented artist.
All the mornings are painful when I wake up all alone. I still smell you on my pillow. Hurt so bad I cry.
For more about Corday and Welcome to My Past, point your web browser to www.envyrecords.com.
And that's it for this edition of Audiophile. You can write to us at P.O. Box 429, Sunland, California, 91041, or online at info@audiophile.org. That's info@audiofile.org. This is Chris Wilson.
And I'm Pam Marshall. Keep listening.
Everything is torture. Everything is rain. Everywhere I go, I'm haunted by your name. You're killing me. Slow motion, where every second's grueling. I tell everyone I'm fine, but I don't know who I'm fooling. 'Cause everything's torture, everything is rain. Everywhere I go, I'm haunted by your name.
Don't miss the best of Audiophile 2000, an entire program devoted to queer music, coming the first week of the new year on a very special edition of This Way Out. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Jay Schulte, Graham Underhill, Jason Lynn, Chris Ambidge, Brian Nunes, Alan Rieke, Rex Walkner, Steve Pride, and Chris Wilson, Pam Marshall, and Christopher David Trentum contributed program material, Jimmy Somerville sang some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by grants from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and the CP Estes Guadalupe Fund, by Planet Out, from designated contributions by Uncommon Cloud Visa card holders who've chosen This Way Out, and through direct charitable donations from our listeners around the world. Special thanks to the Groundlings Theater in Los Angeles for hosting a fundraising comedy benefit performance for This Way Out last month. For audio cassette information or with any questions or comments about This Way Out, please email us at tworadio@aol.com, visit our webpage at thiswayout.org, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California 90038, USA. And please be sure to include the call letters of this station. Remember, you can also hear This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. Just point your browser to www.planetout.com and click first on Multimedia, then on Radio. For Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on 7THE Hobart, Tasmania, WSUI Iowa City, Iowa, KDUR Durango, Colorado, and more than 125 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Do stay tuned.